Kranti. Have we really discovered life on Shikasta B? One thing we know about life is that living things have a larger phase space of possibilities. A stone falling down a cliff is limited by gravity. But a mountain goat can step to the side. He can go up or down. That is why one of the things Avi has been doing is looking for apparent violations of physical law. This is not at all easy. He has found crystalline formations inside some of the caves and tunnels. But you cannot look at entropy alone. Order is also found in non-living things. In my field, we say information inscribes matter. But when something is alive, the information flow is top-down causal. So we need to see whether flow of information becomes alive when its causal structure is determined by the largest scale on which it can have a distinct form. What Avi found was a mat of Lindy motes, the lava dust that, now we know to look for it, is everywhere in Shiprock Canyon. The recurring dust devil we call Dusty Woman leaves layers of dust on the rocky surfaces as she dances. The dust is everywhere, even in the caves and tunnels. It is basically silica dust, crystalline fragments with hydrocarbons mixed in. Avi found a mat of this stuff on the base of some of the rock formations. During a lull in the wind, it moved up a rock face, very slightly. That could just be some small-scale atmospheric vortex, but he's recorded the same thing multiple times in different wind and weather conditions, from dead still air to gales. The vortex event was the strangest. I was there, looking through Avi's eyes, and I saw the Dusty Woman start dancing. Avi was recording the wind speed and gradient, and I saw the Dusty Woman pause. Yes, pause in the middle of the dance. Imagine it, in the light of Avi's headlamps, the wind still blowing, but the dust formation holding. There are so many possible non-life scenarios for this phenomenon. The first thought in my mind was liquid helium-2. In spite of its peculiar behavior, it is not alive. So we can't discount the possibility of a non-life explanation. We have been discussing all this non-stop until we get tired. In the evenings, we sit with bottles of beer or cups of chai and watch the city skyline. There are the searchlights arcing through the polluted air. In the distance are the citadel towers like multicolored candles. Chirag plays our stories back to us. The Lindy motes lay on the rock face to rest. They felt the stirrings, small and large, and rearranged themselves. They were flung into a dance by great vortices of air, and they went whirling. When the whirling stopped as the wind died, the Lindy motes felt the magnetic field lines shift and change and held their place for a moment before falling slowly down onto the surface. "We are playing," said some of the Lindy motes. "We are being played with," said others in wonder. "We are becoming something," said some of the Lindy motes. "We are making something," said others. And so they knew they were themselves, tiny and separate, but together they were Dusty Woman. One of the things I learned from my grandfather is that you cannot separate life from its environment. Understand an environment well enough, and you will understand what kind of life might arise there. Environment is the matrix that works with the life force to generate life forms. That is how the environment becomes aware of itself, when it intra-acts at different scales. So I try to keep my mind open to possibility, even when my imagination comes up with something fantastic, so later on I can apply the constraints that are needed. Imagination has an even larger phase space of possibility than life. Sometimes in the immersphere, I feel I'm slipping away from Earth itself. It is scary, but also exciting.
Annie. Today I am a little shaky. I was stopped by a cop last night. I was walking back through campus at close to midnight when he found me. Its swiveling eyes locked on me, and the voice, gravelly and machine-like, said, "Stop! Do not move!" It scanned me top to bottom with the blue light. The cops can make mistakes, but it found me in its database and I was released. Some of my friends are convinced that the so-called mistakes are deliberate, used as a cover-up to kill leaders of the resistance. My colleague Laura was one of the mistakes. Nobody was punished for her death. The AI tribunal pronounced the cop guilty of an interpretation error, and it was wiped. And that was the end of it. I've heard drone killings are better because they are swift. You have no time to be afraid. The drones are so small that you only notice them, if at all, when you are about to die. Okay. Deep breath. I am alive. I am alive. And what about life on Shikasta 464B? I think a non-life explanation is the most likely. Magnetism is the most obvious thing to consider. Shikasta 464B has a roughly octopolar magnetic field that doesn't do much to protect it from its star's solar wind. The peculiar magnetic field, I believe, is due to the extreme heat of the day side, which causes magma to upwell from the interior onto the surface, dragging with it denser magnetic minerals in long wisps and tendrils. This also causes the local variations in the magnetic field in both space and time. I've looked at Avi's analysis of the dust fragments, lots of silica and basalt grains, and magnetite crystals. Not surprising that the dust moves around in response to the variations in the local magnetic field. There is so much magnetic material churning close to the surface of Shikasta B that the local fields must be shifting all the time. This would result in magnetic dust moving in weird ways, like Avi has observed. A relatively mundane, non-life explanation for Dusty Woman's behavior. Of course, as Kranti points out, the environment shapes the possibilities for life. It would hardly be surprising that if life exists on this world, it would take advantage of the peculiar magnetic field distribution. So, how would life adapt to magnetism, especially to complex and ever-changing magnetic fields? We have magnetotactic bacteria on Earth, and birds that migrate based on the little crystals in their skulls. But navigation wouldn't be much use when the magnetic fields are so weirdly distorted when they change all the time. The three of us have been talking about a new idea that is beginning to take shape. Our old questions, A, what separates life from non-life? B, why is it that so many indigenous cultures regard the universe itself as alive? I think of my grandmother's string games during winter nights. Her fingers working, the constellations shifting from one to another. My favorite is two coyotes running away from each other. Her fingers and the strings between them hold the cosmos in a way I can't articulate. This is what we are thinking, that there is no clear boundary between life and non-life as biologists define it. The answer to what is life depends on your context. My people, like Kranti's people, knew long ago that the universe is connected, every bit linked with every other bit, and even the bits changing form and purpose all the time. This is not mere mysticism. It is consistent with science. If science had not started as a reductionist enterprise through an accident of history, this idea would be familiar. Over the last few days, the three of us have been mapping information channels or communication pathways, although we are not certain these are the same thing. We started with a diagram of a human. There are stabilizing negative feedback loops within each organ for homeostasis, but from organ to organ, these pathways connect, forming even larger meta loops. But because humans are open systems, the pathways connect outside us to the biosphere itself. They connect with the negative and positive feedback loops of the ocean, breathable oxygen, thank you, phytoplankton, and climate as a whole, as well as human-human interactions. Zoom out beyond the biosphere, and the density of connections thins out, but the threads are still there. Solar irradiation providing light and heat, cosmic rays influencing mutations, magnetic fields, gravitational fields reaching out through space between planet and star, planet and planet. Zoom in, into the human body, down to the cells, down to the protons and neutrons in atomic nuclei, and the pathways are there, tangled and dense. There may be some kind of fractal self-similarity governing the scale change. If we draw this loop diagram for a part of our biosphere, what do we see? The densest loops are those within living organisms because they must have been stabilizing feedbacks to allow for steady states, for homeostasis. But even rocks have these, I told Kranti and Chirag exultantly. Rocks communicate through the laws of physics and geology. They sense gravity. They are subject to heat and pressure. They participate in cycles at long and short scales, from weathering to the carbonate silicate cycle, for example. Their loops are just not as dense. So then, what is life and what is not life depends on what cutoff choice you make in communication loop density. There is no a priori distinction between life and non-life. Still, it would be nice to have life that will talk back to us, or at least to Avi. If we truly find life on Shikasta 464b, Avi's position will become delicate. He will no longer be a highly sophisticated measuring instrument, but an alien communicating with potential native life forms. We have spent years talking about the ethics of the situation, considering how we represent peoples at the receiving end of colonization. You designed Avi's protocols for what he should do if we were to find life. But you also put in enough leeway for Avi to develop in his own way. I am beginning to recognize some of your fierce independence in Avi's strange behavior. Of course, we wonder about Bimu all the time. The twins, one on Shikasta 464b and one on Earth, each developing according to his environment. You took Bimu away for safekeeping. It's what cost you your life. I'm taking advantage of the armistice and a plane trip voucher to fly out to Delhi. But first, I'm going home to Window Rock for a few days. There are places where life on the res has become impossible because of the heat and the advance of the sand dunes. But we've found pocket habitats. We've learned to adapt. The coal mines have closed. We are working toward 100% renewable energy. Life is rough and difficult due to the long drought in an already dry land. But adversity has brought the old ways to the surface again. The heat madness has not erupted among us as much as in the world outside our borders. The Southern Federation wants us to join them, but many of our people are resisting. There have been incursions from the west, skirmishes on the borders. Refugees coming in from the south, they say, tore down the old wall between the United States and Mexico with their bare hands. With bleeding hands, they moved up in a wave through El Paso and were turned back with gunfire. It's been a year since I visited, and in that time so much has changed. Cousin Phil is involved in the resistance, working on disabling drones. He tells me his dads can get several of them in one sweep. They drop from the sky like flakes of ash, he says. Uncle Bill's new wind farm is taking off. Lindy's working on a desert farming project. I need to see them. I need a blessing way ceremony. I need to remember what it means to call a place home before I leave.
Kranti, are you listening? Are you listening? I hear that voice in a dream, like a bird calling again and again. It is me. Are you listening? I cannot remember if I have dreamed that dream again and again, or if it's just a memory of the first time. Who is speaking to me? Is it you? Or someone else? What is it I have not listened to? There is so much I do not know. I feel awkward when people praise me. Actually, sometimes I feel angry. It is like they are saying, "How surprising that you know so much, Adivasi girl." An embarrassed laugh. I thought Adivasi girls could only be maids. Very good ones, no offense. But a PhD scientist? Well, genius can appear at random anywhere. Besides, she went to a corporation school. They should put all tribal children in those schools. Look at what the illiterate terrorist junglies are doing. They used to hold me up as an example of what a good Adivasi should be like. They stopped when I started supporting my people's fight against the corporocracy. Then I was called ungrateful, hypocritical, and worse names. But there are more interesting things in the world than angry, ignorant people. So I turn away from them and I think everything in nature communicates, whether through language or signs or signals, even matter. Dead matter speaks through physical law, the interrelationships of variables. I have tried to listen. That is why I wonder about the dream. What is it I have not listened to? Is it Avi speaking to me? Is it you? When I told Chirag and Annie about my dream, Chirag was quiet for a bit. Then he said, "Do you think it was Bhimu?" I was surprised. Bhimu? Calling me in a dream? Chirag looked embarrassed, then admitted he has had recurring dreams that Bhimu is calling him. In the dreams, he is wandering through mountains and deserts, following her voice, convinced she will lead him to you. When he is awake, he thinks of her, lying in pieces deep inside some forest, her bioware torn apart. Just as likely, Annie says, that she is growing up somewhere in the hills or in a desert among nomads, perfectly safe. We have been waiting, listening for Bhimu all these years. Some weeks ago, Annie and I had made up a story about Dusty Woman writing in dust on the canyon walls, Shikastan graffiti. Recently, we have been seeing dust patterns, both dynamic and stationary, that seem to be telling us something. I know humans can deceive themselves. Hubris is powerful. So I learn humility. As the indigenous peoples have always known, humility before nature tempers our delusions. We junglies don't have a word for nature. That is a foreign word, a separation word. But you know what I mean. What is Shiprock Canyon telling us? Its shapes and passageways, its corridors and caves are all mapped now, and we are getting a sense of how strongly the winds blow over it, and the thin vortices that form in certain areas. There are dust ripples like writing on sloping walls, what Chirag calls the calligraphy of the wind. This inorganic material cannot by itself be alive. Avi has also been doing flybys. He will rise suddenly over the canyon, turning slowly, scanning and sensing the magnetic fields, wind speed, visibility. I have realized that he has been increasing the range with each flyby, mapping the larger terrain within which Shiprock Canyon is embedded. And the data he is collecting, if we are right, could mean something spectacular. Saguaro lived deep beneath the canyon, in the darkest places. He was slow, sleepy with the years. Time flowed for him like cooling lava. He could not see, but he had visions. He sensed rivers and pools of fire and the deadly cold beyond. The heat below and the cold above fed his body, which was shot through with long cables of exobacteria, sipping electrons and passing them along. The passageways in which he lay had been shaped by magnetism and geological forces, so the biocables that were artery and vein, nerve and sinew for him, were likewise arranged in response to the ambient magnetism. He lay and dreamed.
Annie. What we are beginning to notice is that superimposed on top of the ambient magnetism are smaller scale variations, like signals riding a radio wave. Where are those variations coming from? Here, up high on the Great Terminator Ridge, the subsurface temperature is too low for rocks to melt, and it is too far for the dense, ionized heavy metals to extend from the planet's core. We expect spatial variations due to the way magnetic ore is distributed, but we don't expect the magnetic field to vary in time so delicately. It's as though there are magnetic beasts in the subterranean caverns and passageways of Shiprock Canyon that, through their movements, create these fine magnetic signatures ever-changing with time. The response of the magnetic dust is consistent with this hypothesis. So Dusty Woman twirls. The wind dies down suddenly, and the dust, for a fraction of a second, changes pattern in a way inconsistent with the fluid dynamics. Now that we are thinking along these lines, we can see in Avi's data the gap between the observed motion of the dust and what we'd expect with only the wind and the ambient magnetic fields as factors. Maybe Saguaro or something like it really does exist in the depths of the canyon. I can't avoid thinking that Dusty Woman is not merely a dust devil. We're going a little nuts, I think. Amid all the excitement, we are trying something new. Outside the mission room is a small patch of arid scrubland dotted with acacia trees. It slopes up to the observation post on top, where there's a sentry. But on the way up, there is a side path into a bunch of trees. It leads to a small clearing, ringed by large boulders. Rainwater forms a small pool here, and the trees are hung with the woven nests of Baya weaver birds. This is a nice little place to sit. You can barely see the city spread out below us due to the haze. The air is warm and thick, and the little birds sing and dart about. An ecologically impoverished place, but one where we can practice the idea of radical immersion. Chirag has the greatest difficulty with this. He is not used to sitting still. He says it makes him nervous. Chirag is letting his determination get in the way. Have you ever seen anyone pushing themselves to relax? But he'll get there once he stops trying so hard. As for me, all I have to do is hold my corn pollen bag in my hand and take myself back home in my memory. I hear the singing. I smell the corn. I see the dancers, feel their rhythms in my bones. Uncle Joe's voice in the background, deep and slow. As I breathe myself into receptivity, I become aware of the world around me. There's a flash of bright yellow. A little male weaver bird darts from the top of a rock to the hanging nest, an insect in his beak. There's the water gleaming, a muddy brown in the afternoon light. A ripple breaks the surface, a tiny frog whose pale throat goes in and out as it breathes. We breathe together, and I smell moisture in the air, just a hint, as though the monsoons may be sending us some rain after all. The weavers go chit-chit in the underbrush. Clouds pass overhead in small flotillas. Later, when I've come out of this, I will remember that I forgot myself in my immersion. I forgot my separateness. I became part of the cosmos, from the frog at the edge of the water to the clouds and beyond. Inside the control room, I say the Hojo prayer, the word so inadequately translated as beauty. And everything seems touched by the sacred, even to opening the fridge to get my lime soda. Later, Chirag will ask me what it was like. His imagination fills in for experience, and he will give me his poet's words to speak into the recorder. Krunti is already in the emisphere, going straight from this world to Shikasta 464B. I don't know what she sees when she practices Immer. Immer on this world, I mean. She never talks about it.
Chirag. Avi is increasingly following his own ideas. Of course, we can't send him commands and expect him to comply immediately. We are separated by 4 light years, after all. But he has a communication protocol that is clearly being violated. He is modifying his own algorithms, ignoring, for example, the need to add commentary to his reports or to explain what he is doing. I've seen him move lumps of magnetic debris in a way that looks like an attempt at communication with whatever it is he thinks he sees here. I think he has crossed the blurry boundary between non-life and life. We are estimating that Avi's Walker Index is probably around 8.3. There's one more strange thing. It's to do with Bhimu. When she and Avi were separated, literally made two, they had already laid the foundations of a new communication system. A private language analogous to what identical twins sometimes make up, but one that makes no sense to us. I've started to look at their old transcripts again. In the patterns, I'm finding similarities to some of the signals from Avi. In Avi's transmissions, what seems like random noise overlaying the signals is revealing regularities astonishing in their subtlety. Am I deceiving myself? Seeing what I want to see? Or is this a hint that Avi is trying to reach Bhimu? That perhaps she is still alive? We have been listening for Bhimu all these years in vain. It is strange that Avi's twin, who was to stay with us on Earth, was the one we lost. After the raid, you escaped with her. For her safety, you didn't tell us where. They captured you, but not Bhimu, in a remote region of the eastern Himalayas. You were at their mercy how long, none of us can bear to think. How long before the picture of you was circulated, lying on the forest floor with gunshot wounds to your chest? They dressed your body in the uniform of one of the insurgent groups and circulated your picture as a triumph of the progressive state versus the terrorists. Allegedly, you had been hunted down after days of tracking you through the forest, yet the uniform was recently ironed, with its creases intact. Later, we tried to find Bhimu among the tribals of the northeast, and then among the new hunter-gatherer anarchist groups. There are so many of the new groups, so many different philosophies. In the West, the gun-toting savagers and the peace-loving Edenites. And here in India, the Prakrits of Madhyabhum and the Asabhyata movement's adherents in the East. I hope that wherever she is, Bhimu is well. And that she'll forgive us for separating her from Avi. If Avi's Walker Index is up to 8.3, what might Bhimu's be? We have no way of knowing. And if Avi is talking to the aliens, what is he saying?
Kranti. Living things, always they contextualize. That is what adaptation is, a constant conversation with the surroundings, a contextualization intended to maintain life as long as possible. Ancient systems of medicine like Ayurveda talk of life force, what we call prana. It is called qi by the Chinese, holy wind by the Navajo. There are complex paths through which the life force flows in the body. And in Ayurveda, the prana flows are part of a greater network, the cosmic prana. Could it be that life force inside living beings is a kind of metaphor for the communication channels? With the difference that in living beings beyond a Walker index of 8, the information flows are top-down causal, shaped by the constraints and demands of the highest scale at which an organism exists. Living things have boundaries and sub-boundaries, but there is no absolute boundary because we are all open systems. In that sense, what you define as life depends on the cut you make. Ancient peoples, forest-dwelling people, desert tribes, they have always made different cuts in the world than scientists. Sometimes I make the cut as a scientist, sometimes as an Adivasi. I can slip from one world to another very quickly.
Chirag, Kranti's not being concrete, of course. Her mind has always moved faster than her words can keep up with. What she is trying to say is that if this is a life form, it is communicating via local magnetic fields and it may actually be morphologically distributed. She is saying that perhaps its body is here, there, and everywhere. Maybe the universal constructor, the control unit, is distributed too. Either that, or we have a superorganism of some sort. There is, after all, no a priori way of telling the difference between an individual and a community of individuals. And there are life forms on Earth, Kranti points out, like slime molds that can exist as individuals as well as collectives. Those survey flybys that Avi did, if we are interpreting them correctly, are like the view you get when you rise up in an airplane over a city at night. You see nodes and structures, grids and symmetries. What he's seen, what we've seen through his eyes, converted to visuals, is absolutely breathtaking. Magnetic field lines swirling and shifting, field variations that are too dynamic and too widespread to be explained by mere geology. That's Annie scoffing at me in the background for using mere and geology in the same breath. In the dark spaces between the glowing lines, in the gradations, there are suggestions of long, sinuous shapes that move and starfish-shaped exclusions that rotate slowly in place. Something lies deep within the fissures and canyons of the Terminator Plateau. Through its magnetic senses, it knows the high escarpment and the magma seas far below. And, another speculation here, since the magnetic fields of planet and star are constantly interacting with each other, how astonishing if this beast, if it is a beast indeed, is also sensing the storms and moods of its parent star. Saguaro lived deep beneath the canyon, in the darkest places. He was old and wide, branching like the forks in a tree. Lying nearly still, he sensed the deep, fiery places beneath him, the pulls and tugs of the magnetized lava surging below, rising up like incandescent lace. Overhead, he sensed the great cold, the more distant, yet larger, grander pull of something unfathomable, enormous beyond comprehension. The tugs from the star surged and varied, so although he could not see the red dwarf, he came to know its moods, its storms and meditations. He felt the tugs mediated by cold rock, the rock within which he lay like a many-armed god, but above that, he had a sense of space, of motion. Here, in this tenuous region, he sensed the flow of magnetized material as dust, smaller bodies that moved differently, as though free of the grasp of the earth below. And a longing rose up in him to stretch toward that intermediate space between the star and the planet, neither of which he could see. But he knew their deep hearts, their veins of fire. Stretching, moving, he sensed he could make the Lindy motes, for that was what the dust was, move in response. Through their resistance, he knew the wind, and he thought, "There is someone other than me in that clear space above the rock. I must speak to it," he said. And in that moment of recognizing another, he also knew loneliness. So he shifted his massive, coiled, many-branched body, and the wind, through the motion of the Lindimotes, knew him too. So he danced with the wind, and Dusty Woman said, "Who is shaking my skirts?"
Annie. Cronte had a sort of breakdown last week. I don't know what to call it. She collapsed just after a session in the Emisphere. We got her through the barricades to the university hospital. Chirag and I were terrified. She is stable now, somewhat annoyed at all the fuss, which is heartening. I'm so glad I'm here with the two of them. Together, we four are something that deserves a name of its own. So far, Chirag's only come up with AKCX, which is kind of clunky. Kranti's mother and grandfather came to be with her. Her mother is a stern woman, very focused on the care being given to her daughter. Her grandfather is a character. He's very old, wiry and thin, with a bright and irreverent gaze. He reminds me of my great-uncle Victor. I could stay up trading stories with him all night. Grandfather, as we call him, tells us how his foothill tribe is trying to create a hybrid lifestyle, an alternative economy based on their old ways, but internet savvy. If only the rest of the world would let them be. They are sitting on huge veins of bauxite, which are needed to feed the world's demand for aluminum. And, for staying on their land, they are treated like terrorists, under attack by drones and paramilitary forces. And they still have not given up. Listening to Grandfather's somewhat broken English, I am homesick suddenly for the high plateau. Update. A. Cronte's been told that she can get back to work in a couple of weeks. She's not sick in any way we understand, but I think it is a lot to take. All those hours spent looking through Avi's eyes. The neurologists tell us her EEG shows irregularities that were not in her baseline data. Chirag has this wild idea that the apparent irregularities are actually patterns, similar to the so-called noise in Avi's signals, which bears a remarkable resemblance to the as-yet-undeciphered private language of the twin ultra-AIs. If it's happening with Cronte, is it a matter of time before this process, whatever it is, starts to happen with Chirag and me? What are we becoming? Could ultra-AIs like Avi can achieve a connection across the gulf of space-time, resulting in the formation of a being that is morphologically distributed over such vast distances? Maybe I'm being fanciful. Update B. We received a message on a secure channel today. Point of origin not yet traced. Chirag ran his decrypting program, and the result was a scramble of pairs of numbers. We had the brilliant idea that these were XY coordinates. We got a plot that didn't make sense, a fuzzy pattern rather than a recognizable function. Then, I happened to see the printout from a distance. "It's a picture," I said, and Chirag looked and said, "That's Avi." Why would there be a picture of Avi on a secure channel and a pointillist one, for heaven's sake? Then it hit us both. Bimu. It was a fuzzy picture of Avi's twin, but with sharp protrusions like wings. Wings? That got us excited. And scared. The only ultra AI left on Earth. The one that got you killed. Is the message from her? From her protectors? Where is she? Chirag's trying to trace the point of origin of the message. It can only be from someone in our inner circle, which includes Bimu, unless security's been breached. In Kranti's hospital room, we had a whispered consultation, but there is nothing really we can do but wait and make sure security, cyber and otherwise, is as tight as hell. Later, the tension got a bit too much for us. Chirag and I went off to the old campus and found the boulder on top of the hill where we used to stargaze as college students. We lay there talking and drinking tea from a local tea shack. After we had exhausted the subject of Bimu, we were silent for a while. This is where it all began, all those years ago. After a while, Chirag said, "You know we are shaped by the cosmos. Cosmic rays are raining down upon us right now, causing mutations in our cells, affecting evolutionary pathways. All those distant cataclysms light years away, determining whether I end up a monkey or a man." "Can't tell the difference," I said, expecting a rude retort. But he just sighed. Chirag the poet. But the mood had taken me over, too. I couldn't see Shikasta 464B's dim old sun with the naked eye, but I knew what he meant. I thought back to the old stories I'd heard as a child. When the nights were mild, we would sit around a campfire and look up at the constellations as the elders told the stories. Every once in a while, a coyote would call from the sagebrush, as though joining in. Through all the years of my scientific training, I lost that feeling of belonging in a great old universe. Modern science is a shattered mirror. You see bits and pieces in each shard, sometimes in great detail, but never the whole. I nearly gave up the old way of knowing for the new way. But I felt it more and more lately. And under that sky, I felt it again.
Kranti. I came back from the hospital just in time for the evening newscast. 2 more official mammal extinctions as of today. The strangest is a species of whale that was only discovered 3 years ago. They found the bodies on the beaches of Siberia. When the sea ice went, ice algae went also. That caused a catastrophic ecosystem collapse, leading to anoxia, which killed all the fish. Now this whale is extinct. I think of the forest I would have grown up in that also is no longer there. I am filled with so much sadness. On the positive side, we have received 2 more messages on the secure line. They are almost the same as the first one, but when we plot them, the images are larger and larger. Chirag says that Bimu is coming home. If she comes home, if we all survive, it will be very interesting to see how far she has come. AI intelligence is quite different from that of animals, and so it must evolve differently. How will an ultra AI on Earth interact with other Earth species? We are only just starting to figure out Avi's interaction with Saguaro on a planet 4 light years away. Humans have learned to communicate with 3 other animal species. We can speak a little bit of Gibbonese and a very rough bowhead and some dialects of dolphin. What Bimu could contribute to our increasing theorolinguistic abilities, we don't know. Even with the heat madness and the terrible things people do to one another and the long lines at the refugee service centers, the old solidarity circles are coming up around the world. Like small ecosystems, they are emerging wherever new ideas and old ones have the freedom to develop. People are meeting in their houses, solving their problems together, discussing alternatives. Even some busties have developed their own currency. What is the critical density of these kinds of pocket ecologies beyond which we can have system change? When will we change our ways en masse, in time to immer inside our own biosphere so we can heal with the Earth systems that maintain life on this planet? When our project first started, I had a lot of arguments with my cousins. They said, "Why don't you raise money to help our people?" I did not have a good answer to that, and still that is so. But actually, our crowdfunding initiative ended up putting money into the community. Annie is funding an alternative school on her reservation, and Chirag has started a scholarship for Dalit scientists. My part of it has helped the tribe hire the best lawyers for the big fight. And you gave us the DADS, Drona's Apology Defense System, the most intelligent drone-destroying system ever designed, keeping us safe from Arizona to Indonesia. But I know that we would not have collected so much money if the projects had only been about community transformation. People are much more willing to fund space exploration projects. We have a dream, the three of us. No, the four of us, because you are here in your own way. A dream for an alternative university. One distributed across the world that includes the best of indigenous knowledge practices and explores a new kind of science, just as rigorous as the one we know, but it goes beyond the shattered mirror model, the one Annie described. Another thing our way has shown us is that our practices, like radical immersion, allow certain values to emerge that then feed back to affect the practices, illuminating Frousian value dynamics in a new way. See, how you practice science is a function of your values. Normally, you design experiments or observations based on distance and so-called objectivity, but you lose information in the process. When you change the practice, it also changes what you value. Chirag always says I'm too idealistic. Probably that is true. We are the shadow people, the broken people emerging from the cracks in the collapsing structures of the world. For so many generations, we have been told we are primitive, backward, in need of help, in need of uplifting. Sometimes, we have even been invited to what Chirag calls the smashing, burning, drinking mega-party that is modern civilization. We have been pushed from one world to another, wondering who we are, where is our place, never really able to move out of the shadow zone. And now we know. We have something necessary to give the world. We have visions of how we might live differently. We have answers to the destructive loneliness of modern civilization. Ultimately, our aim in starting this project was not to escape from Earth. The big space agencies justify their existence by saying it is natural for humans to wander and explore. That is true. But it is also true that only a tiny percentage of the world's people have left their homes through much of Earth's human history. People also like to belong someplace. Trash, burn, and leave is not our way, as you said so many years ago. I'm thinking of the pictures the first astronauts beamed back to us, the Earth seen from space, the pale blue dot. We should always look back toward home, no matter how far we go. I come from a people who know how to belong in a way that civilization has forgotten. I feel a need to return to the terminator of Shikasta 464B, where Avi has gone native. Life beckons to life and to mystery too. But I also have another deep desire to practice immersion among the green hills, the cloud forests of my people. There are things we still have to discover about life here, life on Earth. There are things Bhimu will help us learn if she comes out of hiding. What we find will not leave us unchanged, and that is how it should be. I have always walked in multiple worlds. What is one more? Message received on secure channel, encrypted. Message extract. Calling AKCX. Are you listening? As I made the being aware of the universe beyond its planet and its star, I became aware myself. I send this to let you know that although I can't come home, I am home. Here and there with you and Bhimu. Prepare to receive data file with magnetic field map in real time. Somebody has a message for you.